Every 23rd year, for 23 days, it gets to eat. And the things it leaves behind, like the thing it left in Poho County that night, the nightmare on four wheels, was a horror all its own.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus Jeepers Creepers series.
I don't know if it's a demon or a devil, or just some hungry thing from some dark place in time. I just know it's not gonna stop coming after you or anyone else it wants to.
As seen through the eyes of our hosts, Marjorie.
Just go tell them what you saw so that we can get out of here, okay?
Arnie.
I've looked that ugly thing eye to eye. I know it, and it knows me.
And Stuart.
You got your team. You got experienced men who know this thing.
The team is more than law enforcement. Anyone who's looked this thing eye to eye and lived to tell about it and wants to do something about it.
These podcasts contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
You know the part in scary movies where somebody does something really stupid and everybody hates them for it? This is it.
Listener discretion is advised.
I hear it playing while one of you is screaming. Screaming down in the dark somewhere. Screaming the last scream you'll ever scream.
Today we're discussing Jeepers Creepers Reborn, starring people who don't even have Wikipedia pages, including Sidney Craven, Imran Adams, Jaru Benjamin, and then a couple people you have heard of, Dee Wallace and Gary Graham, directed by Timo Virenzola. This is Arnie, the Now Playing co-host, who's got them hungry, hungry eyes.
And Stuart.
And Marjorie.
And we are back at the Jeepers Creepers retrospective, one of our most controversial retrospectives, given the creator of the first three films, Victor Salva. 5 years ago, he came out with part three, and I have never heard anybody talk about it besides us. It does not come up in casual horror movie conversation.
Definitely not memorable. In fact, so forgettable that I just did this franchise a favor and went back and rewatched all three films. I felt like I couldn't go off my impressions because they were all hazy, and they were mostly about Victor Salva and his convicted crimes. I really just wanted to try and see the movies for themselves. I feel like I can do them a little bit more service than we did during the podcast. Sometimes when we research these things, we dive deep. You know, you can hear it on those shows. I was really wrestling with the fact that a convicted pedophile was making a horror comedy in which a creepy monster kind of made light of things that he had done on movie sets. And if you have the right set of peepers, I actually think it's hard to deny that Victor Salva had some filmmaking talent. And that those first two movies sporadically had some good sequences, largely cribbed from Spielberg. I mean, it was Duel, it was Jaws. But I do think I can be kinder to those first two. There is some merit to Jeepers Creepers 1 and 2 if, and that's a huge ask, if you can get past Victor Salva. It seems like they've done themselves a favor by not asking him back to direct part 4.
They've done themselves a favor by cutting him out completely. Now, I don't know any of the behind-the-scenes stuff, but if you believe what you read, interviews with this director and everything, Victor Salva, he's out. He's not making any royalties off of this new movie. The fact that he is the creator of The Creeper, I don't know if it was a deal with Part 3 or a deal signed after Part 3, but I think the studio realized he is toxic. And we can't continue this franchise with him in any way. So no matter what happens with Jeepers Creepers 4, however many nickels it makes, Victor Salva is not getting one of those nickels.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned it in the third one, but yeah, when there are protests to you having a casting call, like he did in Canada, trying to make that third movie, he needed an underage girl, and that just sent people screaming. You just can't have that in your movie, even though, like, I think, again, he has some talent, and he's not canceled. At least he's not canceled yet. He has two projects in pre-production, one of them a $3 million horror film called Old Hag Syndrome, and the other one has Brad Dourif in it, playing, get this, a Native American killer clown. I don't know how those elements come together, but if it should get made, I might actually put my peepers on that one.
Admittedly, Brad Dourif says take what you hear about his casting announcements with a grain of salt, because he doesn't know about many of the things that have been announced that he was in. If you recall, he was supposed to be in that Reanimator reboot, yes. And he's like, I've never heard of it.
You personally asked him how that was going. He was like, what? Never mind. Yes, the internet lies, people. Surprise. We can't know if any of these movies are going to materialize or if Brad Dourif will be in them, so don't protest him yet. He doesn't need to be canceled for any association he may or may not have with Salva. But yes, let's breathe a sigh of relief and say we can now focus on new talent, which comes in the form of Finnish director Timo Vuorensola.
I'm sorry, you said new talent. Don't you mean new people?
I use that definition very lightly. Look, Timo has one mild hit. He has a cult sensation called Iron Sky. It's a comedy about Nazis. What if they, after World War II, took refuge on the moon and came back in spaceships?
You know, I'm kind of feeling, though, after you've told me this, that they jumped out of the fire with Victor Salva into the frying pan with this Timo guy now and his Nazi show.
I actually turned it off. It's just not my sense of humor. It's about as funny as Sharknado, which is to say, to me, like, too much tongue-in-cheek and not enough jokes. Like, it's laughing that it exists and not actually constructing humorous things to do with Nazis from space. But what that direction tells to me, if Jeepers Creepers is getting Timo, we are going to have the jokiest creeper yet. We are going to have the campiest, most outrageous movie of the four.
What I knew coming into this was not very enticing. I had read a brief plot summary of this that said, attendees at a horror hound horror convention are slowly attacked by the creeper. And I've seen movies. There's one called Smothered that starred Kane Hodder. And there's been a couple of other movies I've seen that were filmed at real horror conventions. And you take a couple of those guests who happen to be in that town on a weekend anyway and are willing to work really cheap on a no-budget production. Maybe you've got an Indiegogo going on or something like that for this. You got $25,000 and a name like Kane Hodder, and you're making a movie and filming at the convention. And that Horror Hound was named specifically, and we've been to Horror Hound conventions, it's a real thing, made me think that this was going to be a huge plug for those conventions and less a movie.
Kind of like how the Spirit Halloween store now has a movie about itself.
Yes, but I just didn't have high hopes for something that was going to tie itself so closely to a horror convention. But when I saw the trailer for this, I was heartened because it didn't look as cheap as I had expected it to look. It didn't look like they'd gone down to Best Buy and bought the prosumer level video camera and just filmed with that. It actually looked like there was some lighting involved. There was some makeup involved. So
these are your standards after we've covered Uwe Boll film. Yeah. Thank God there's production value of any kind.
Exactly. I mean, I feel that way. That's the level of cheapness I expect when it comes to these kinds of movies. So I was excited, a little less so when I found out this doesn't really have a release. It was a Fathom event, much like the last one was, Jeepers Creepers 3. But unlike the last one, there's still no notice of when this is getting on streaming. According to an article I just read, there's not a deal in place yet.
Right, yeah. And I think this did okay for Fathom events, but was not the huge success that, I mean, we laugh, but Jeepers Creepers 3 was also a one night only for the fans. That was one of the highest grossing Fathom events. And, you know, this one, there were people there. I'll put it that way. It was three nights. I went on the second night And it was an audience of about 30 people, a variety, racially mixed, age-wise mixed. There was old white men. There was young women by themselves. There were couples on date nights. There were mostly 20-year-old guys that liked to heckle and talk to the screen.
Yeah, this one was three nights for us as well. We meant to go on Monday, and there were five other tickets sold that night. Ended up not being able to make it, going on Tuesday, the second night. The theater parking lot was packed, people coming in droves. There was another Fathom event going on that night, Clerks 3. Everybody was streaming right into Clerks 3 and bypassing the door to Jeepers Creepers 4. But we had about 10 people in ours, and yeah, that was a mix like yours. I was surprised to see a single woman there just grabbing a burger and some fries in the Jeepers Creepers film on a Tuesday night, and there were people of all races, mostly I'd say aged 20 to 40.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't see any children. I didn't see any family audiences. It hasn't crossed the generations yet. But yes, for a franchise that now, what are we talking about, 21 years? You know, they should have just waited till they were 23 years, right? The whole thing's about waiting 23 years for Rebirth, but almost as long as it takes Jeepers to remake himself, we've had this franchise in existence, and I'm not necessarily seeing that it's going to survive the next 23 years.
They didn't even want to wait this long. The script, I don't know, did you have a little introduction by the director before the film at the Fathom event?
You know, funny you should ask that. Fathom events don't play. I'm just going to put it out there. Usually I stroll in a little late on movies because my feeling is I don't want to watch the 20 minutes of previews that I see every time I go to a movie. So I just showed up 5 minutes late and I missed even the credits. Like, it was just Dee Wallace and the other dude driving. I was like, oh shit. Like, I saw nothing before the start of this movie.
There were some ads for other Fathom events, but there was an introduction by the director where he talked about how in 2019 he was approached to make a film and he wasn't told what it was. But it was a horror film, and then he was given the script and saw it was Jeepers Creepers 4, and he was very excited as a fan of the other Jeepers Creepers movies as a chance to take it in a new direction. And then COVID hit, so they were not able to film this as soon as they had expected. They'd gotten the green light, so I imagine this probably would have been out 2 years ago if it hadn't been for COVID. If they were talking about it in 2019, I can't imagine too many people stayed up late nights working on this thing. So I imagine October 2020 would have been a release date, but they ended up filming during COVID in two different shoots. They shot in Louisiana and London for some reason.
Oh, I can tell you the reason. All these actors are British. Every single person here is a non-American pretending to be a Louisianan, and it's sometimes painful. It's so weird because these days we fully expect all our entertainment to come from the South. Atlanta is the new Hollywood. Louisiana gets a lot of movie deals. So you would think it would be easy. If your location is actually Louisiana, you wouldn't have to fake it with England, but I guess they did because of COVID.
Well, I guess why England is my thing is why I understand the cast is British. I barely understand their dialogue because half the cast is British and they don't hide those accents well. But I just don't understand why you'd choose to base this in London to begin with.
You don't remember having to stay at home for a year, Artie? Like, these people are European. They're not flying to America. No one is going anywhere.
I don't know. I just would have thought Romanian instead of British.
Yeah, well, whatever. Look, I'm not their producer. I don't know how they got the tax credit. But one thing I'll just say about Timo and Iron Sky is he's not really big on shooting on location anyway. He does a lot of green screen work. You can see it in this movie. It's not just because they couldn't physically get there because of COVID. He just likes to do the George Lucas thing and put his actors in a studio where he can control and create the environment around them.
Well, yeah, he was there just thanking us for showing up at the event and discussing briefly some of the challenges that made it. I said to Marjorie as the movie was about to begin, so I'm picturing a movie where the creeper is going to stay 6 feet away from everybody at all times. As much as he was talking about COVID.
Yeah, they seemed rather heavy on mentioning the COVID at the beginning when he was giving his speech. And I'm like, yep, yep, everyone's going to be like 6 feet away and it's going to be killing by long distance is what's going to be happening.
Well, let's find out what happens. Arnie, give him the plot and we'll see Jeepers Creepers Reborn.
Horror film fan Chase is excited to be going to the Horror Hound convention in Louisiana. His pragmatic girlfriend Lane is less excited, finding this whole thing cheesy. Each has a secret for this trip. She doesn't know he's going to propose, and he doesn't know she's pregnant. Chase is a creeper fanatic, but in this movie's reality, the first three Jeepers Creepers films are just movies, called Creepy Creepers. And the creeper is an urban legend like Bigfoot. So these two have no way to know that in the Louisiana woods, the actual creeper has just woken up and is ready to feed. And in fact, a number of creeper worshippers are running the horror convention. They're sequestering some attendees to feed the creeper. Two of those intended victims are Chase and Lane. They win, quote unquote, a contest where they get to spend a night in the creeper's escape room, which is a house nearby, and there is no escape. They're just locked in.
It's like the layman's escape room. There's no way you can figure out how to get out, except by pushing down the wall. That thing looks so flimsy.
The young couple is accompanied by horror hound carny Stu, influencer Carrie, Carrie's producer Jamie, and their cameraman Michael. With these first five victims locked in the house, the creeper starts to pick them off one by one, but he has something special in store for pregnant Lane. He kidnaps the woman, ties her up, and starts to perform some ceremony on her. But as the creeper flies back and forth between Lane and the other victims, Lane is able to cut herself loose. The creeper kills cameraman Michael, producer Jamie, and influencer Carrie, but Stu and Chase are able to find Lane. The three escape the house, but still chased by the creeper, Lane stabs the creeper's eyes out with its own ceremonial dagger, and Stu and Chase climb on the roof and use the world's largest weather vane to impale the creeper. A swarm of crows come, and Stu falls off the roof to his death, but Chase makes it back inside and down the stairs, and reunited with Lane, who says she accepts his proposal of marriage. The police come to investigate the carnage as Chase and Lane wander off, but Lane's eyes flash black as if she's possessed or something, as credits roll.
Or something.
As we start, again, I missed all the credits. Was there anything cool in those, what could have only been 3 or 4 minutes? Did something happen?
The movie starts off with Dee Wallace and Gary Graham playing the license plate game. So if you got to see them playing license plates, you missed absolutely nothing.
Whew, okay. Well, thank God. I would hate to miss a millisecond of this thing.
Well, if you missed a millisecond, you'd be missing a large fraction of the short runtime.
Perhaps the funniest joke, certainly the most subtle joke in this, is the idea that we essentially are watching the original film. This is exactly what Justin Long and Gina Phillips did. And the joke is we're watching the real story. The version we know is the Hollywood version. So this is this new part four. I don't know what we're calling this. Is it a requel, sequel, reboot?
The director calls it a reboot.
Yeah, it feels like it's stepping away in the same way that New Nightmare stepped away from Nightmare on Elm Street and says, yeah, you can like those other things, but we're not beholden to them. We're going to do our own thing. And yes, it's so like Hollywood. If it were something that happened to senior citizens, we'll turn it into sexy siblings, 20-year-olds. But I don't know, are these real gets? Dee Wallace, let's just boil it down. She had The Howling, and now she does Rob Zombie things. I don't know that she's that beloved.
But she was the mom in E.T.
Okay, all right, I'll give you that. Gary Graham was the human in the Alien Nation TV show. I don't know why that gets you anything.
Okay, but it really bugged me because I'm like, I know who this guy is because I loved Alien Nation when it was out. I loved the TV show, but I couldn't figure out where this guy was. But I found actually this vignette at the beginning to be the most enjoyable part of the movie. They worked well together. They acted well. The story was kind of fun and creepy. And then it just goes all downhill from there.
Well, yeah, they're remaking the best part of the entire franchise. That first 30 minutes of Jeepers Creepers 1 is a really solid B-movie. Like, it's a really enjoyable ride. And they've reduced it and changed it by having this cast. It's a greatest hits. They're playing all the things we love. They're reminding us of what was good about Jeepers Creepers.
What's funny is I came into this with the lowest of expectations, Jeepers Creepers 4, and this is meeting them. When you see the creeper truck and they do the close-up on the license plate and it looks like a brand newly pressed license plate, it doesn't have the rust and the yellow letters that have become, dare I say, iconic to this franchise. The truck doesn't have the dangerous grill. I'm like, did they literally just rent some piece of shit truck? Is this supposed to be the new creeper vehicle? This thing is even cheaper than I expected. This reminds me of, like, if we were making this movie in our preteen years, Stuart, and we just knew somebody who had a truck, and that was all it took. We'd, like, dot matrix print off a license plate that said beating you, and we would consider that truck to be close enough to the creeper truck. I didn't recognize either of these actors, and I was just shocked at how cheap this was, but I had a nagging feeling the entire time that this was going to be a fake out, that this wasn't really the movie, that we were seeing something else because it was too much like Jeepers Creepers 1. I felt like they were going to pull some trick, and they do, but I feel like they pull it too late. Like, they let this opening go on way too long after the chase. I think the chase is fun, but when they spin off the road and sit there and then have Gary Graham be like, I'm going to call the police, what was that license plate number, and then get back on the road and see the creeper changing a tire or something. I just think, listen, this movie's short. They probably had to use every frame they captured, but I feel like if you're going to pull this trick of the opening of the movie isn't really the opening of the movie, you shouldn't spend this much time on it.
I don't know. I didn't sit there with a stopwatch and scream. It feels like a Scream beginning, you know, like you get the big celebrity death at the start, and then we switch gears and get into the movie.
Except it's like Scream in that if you started watching Scream and you were watching Stab, and then you find out that you're now characters watching that movie.
They do that, by the way. Scream 4 did that, was how it opened.
I'm aware. I'm just saying they did that here. And this is almost 10 minutes of a 80-minute movie.
And the best 10 minutes in the 80-minute movie. I'm agreeing with Marjorie on that one.
Absolutely the best.
And, you know, again, there's just a subtle joke in that. That, I mean, we pull back and we are looking at this through someone's cell phone. And the title Macabre Mysteries goes across. And we realize it's one of those hokey reenactments that we never believe. Or at least I always think those programs are suspect. And it underlines something kind of satirical about those things, that if it was true that the last we ever saw of this couple was that they were staring down that pipe, how would anyone know what happened to them to document it? You know what I mean? Like, so we already know that even though they're claiming this is the true story, they're not. This is all living in urban legend and myth. And this Louisiana backroads has actually kind of exploited the idea that there's this local legend, this Bigfoot, this chupacabra, you know, like they're creating an environment in which everyone in the community of Louisiana is sort of in on this. And for reasons, really need an interracial couple that's expecting to be their new target. Why do they want Lane so bad?
See, I wondered if it was a crime of opportunity if she showed up and that Lady Manila was like, she's pregnant, so we must have this. But it seems like it is a setup from before that, and I can't figure out why. It's like 30 minutes of this movie is missing somewhere sometimes.
What I'm getting, all the locals want Creeper to be reborn. He is real. They promote him as their Bigfoot to get people to come there so that they, the tourists, can be the thing that Creeper eats.
Did this have a bit of a Rob Zombie Lords of Salem vibe to you? That's what I was sort of getting off of this, but also sort of going back to the first one where you had the psychic in Jeepers Creepers. Here, they're lost. They were spending too much time watching Macabre Mysteries and not enough time using GPS, I guess. And they say the satellite doesn't work above this area. So you can't use GPS. You have to pay this rube $50 and get a map. And she's the one setting it off. But when she and Lane touch, It's like there's a psychic connection between the two.
They always pull that shit in Jeepers Creepers. There's always the stupid part when one character just suddenly conveniently becomes psychic and can know some things. We don't need to do that. Like, why don't we establish rules? If Jeepers Creepers is being reborn, we have been complaining for 3 films now that his lore does not add up. So step away from whatever you didn't like. And one thing I definitely advocate is you get rid of that 23-year shit that has never worked to their favor, that there has to be that gestation period. But you just take the parts you like and have this town be the evil town that, you know, the cultists that promote a local horror legend so that I don't know what. You got to give reasons. And what I think continues to be frustrating about Jeepers Creepers is that they don't think further than seeing the monster. Like, they don't want to explain where it comes from. They don't want to really explain the motives of why these people would want him around. And really, they don't even explain why Chase would be so into him. I thought they were going to a horror con, but then we find out actually he's just into the creeper. I can't figure it out. And it's a horror con that's not on a map and nobody knows how to get there. And yet local news is there, like, televising and trying to promote it. Like, it's just very disorganized, these ideas.
Okay, so let me give you a little bit of background on Horror Hound. Also, it is a real set of conventions. They are not held in a field with a DJ. Mm-hmm. They're usually held at a hotel convention center, packed in hotel ballrooms. It is not the Coachella of cosplay. That's actually Dragon Con in Atlanta over Labor Day weekend. That is like everything cosplay, and it's fantastic. But having been to a number of Horror Hound conventions, I've yet to find one in the middle of a field at the middle of the night with some weird costumes. Now, there's always a little bit of weirdness, but it's nothing at all like the convention. So this whole setup with the convention, Horror Hound must have paid a lot of money to be part of this, or ponied up money to help the production. I'm not sure, but it was strange to have Horror Hound like shoehorned in there.
I wouldn't say that it's a heavy reference. Basically, it comes down to Chase is wearing the shirt. But I don't see that they have signs of Horror Hound. It would be better if this were not a convention, but in fact, he was just a super fan of this creeper and wanted to see where these attacks allegedly happened and stumbled upon a village that was trapping him and his wife to be.
I agree, that would have been better. What they have here, it's really strange. Again, yes, as a seasoned congoer, that they arrive at night. And then I'm like, okay, so they're not going to the con till the next day, because they're going to go to the hotel room and play dress-up cosplay without telling Lane. Chase has just brought a whole bunch of fetish costumes for her to dress up in, including Sexy Freddy and Harley Quinn. And then I think it's Edward Scissorhand. Like, maybe the other Scissorhand broke and they just decided to film it anyway. But she comes out looking like Johnny Depp with a single hand of scissors.
What I can't figure out is what she settles on. She ends up like saying, oh, this is perfect, and it's just a white dress. Was that somebody?
Yeah, I don't know what that is either.
Yeah, Bride of Frankenstein, maybe? Kind of, maybe it was a wedding dress? I don't know. I did like how they get the requisite Harley Quinn-like outfit in that you see at every single convention multiple times.
This is what I was talking about with Iron Sky. It was like, you think Nazis coming from space would just be this outrageous thing that you could just make tons of jokes for them. And in the end, they squander all those opportunities and it just kind of plays flat with no jokes. And here, yeah, you're going to a horror con and it's time to like savage the kinds of people that go there, the things they do, the things they wear. And I don't know, like, is this supposed to be degrading? Like, I get the sense when she says she doesn't want to wear it, that we're to feel bad for Chase, that we're not to mock this convention in any way. We're not on Lane's side, that this is a silly place.
This is definitely promoted by Horror Hound. You talk about that shirt. That shirt, after she gets her cosplay dress and asks him, what are you wearing? And he goes, I'm wearing this t-shirt. And it's a close-up of the Horror Hound attendee t-shirt, and he's going to wear it the whole time. You're not going to savage a convention when a convention is quite clearly involved in the production here. You don't even need to savage a convention, because I don't think horror cons are San Diego Comic-Con. I don't think people know horror cons enough where you can parody them. I think you could have actually had some insight into them. You could have shown people, you know, the lines to wait in for hours so that you can get the actual Jeepers Creepers actor's autograph and the D-list celebrities who are just sitting there twiddling their thumbs like Zach Galligan because nobody wants the autograph of the human from Gremlins. I mean, there are things you could have done to both be true to and poke fun at a horror convention, but what you don't do is pretend that you're at a sideshow at Lollapalooza where there's knife-throwing contests and every single person is in cosplay and you're doing this out in the woods. I don't understand the draw of this convention. There doesn't appear to be a single celebrity other than a former Miss Universe.
No, and not even that horror-based. Other than the sexy Freddy walking down the catwalk, I saw a couple juggalos and a dude in an Alice in Chains t-shirt. It's like metalheads. Again, it's not a well-conceived depiction of any convention at all. It doesn't get the culture. And I would think that you'd want to have a little bit of campy fun with the location. Or don't do it and say, we're not a horror con and this is just a town that's trying to remain secretive and it has this local monster that prowls the woods and some of those clips are on YouTube and you just go with that.
It's almost like they told Timo that, hey, Horror Hound is paying us money. It's a horror convention, and sometimes they have after parties with a DJ. Go for it. And he had no idea, and this is just like someone's envisioning of what happens at a horror convention when they have never been to one or have no idea.
Yeah, well, and again, if you're working with Horror Hound, they need to supply you with the things that would actually be at the convention then. They need to make it feel real. Why would they want you to think that it's this pitiful?
Yeah, nothing here makes me want to go to a Horror Hound.
Yeah. So all of this as a setup. What I'm really stressing here is as a setup, this is really lame. And the other thing that's really lame are the production values. In tandem, as this couple is making their way, and it takes them forever to get to the convention and to get to what I would think is actually where you'd want to start, that they're going to be stuck in an escape room, you see that Creeper is being reborn. I don't exactly know why. I know that he's eating earthworms, a wild boar, and then eventually a dude in a sports car who maybe Lane's brother or friend or something.
I think it's her gay friend.
Yeah, but again, like, it's so air misted on, it's difficult to know whether we should be laughing, what is the creeper gaining by eating him. I mean, one of the coolest things about this monster, I think, is the idea that it will eat the body part that it needs to adapt and fix itself. And so you would want every time it feasts to have significance. And I think the kills that kick off this movie, this guy and then the random dude that wanders off into the woods to smoke pot, it just feels like a quota. We just need to have somebody die, and so you're it.
And a lot of this feels inserted because what you have is Lane and Chase are still driving while the creeper is crawling out of the ground. I gotta just assume 23 years have passed, and that's why the creeper is drawing out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But Lane runs out of the car, and she's quote-unquote car sick, which of course tells us as an audience who's thinking she's pregnant. I mean, that's the only reason somebody's gonna vomit in a movie if they're a woman, unless it's The Stand or something. And so she's pregnant, and then she gets on the phone with this guy we never hear mentioned again, and he's in that sports car. He had to take a piss. The woods look exactly the same. Like, I literally thought they were 10 feet away from each other, and they probably were. And this feels like some insert shot that when they saw the assembly cut, somebody's like, we need him killing more than grub worms and robbing the clothes off a scarecrow for the first 45 minutes of this. So we're going to just film new footage. I do know there were pickup shots for this in a second shooting schedule. And I think they decided that we're going to do some pickup shots and we're going to have this horribly stereotypical homosexual representation. Like the way he's talking about the shoes and the mud and everything else. And
shoot, I mean, no gay people are talking about Air Force Ones. Again, this is what I mean about like this director not even understanding what he's targeting as comedy. Like, I guess that's a type, but it must be a European type. He makes a joke. Look, you're supposed to be in Louisiana, and he makes a joke about tinkering his Taylor soldier spy. They ain't reading John Le Carré in Louisiana. You don't know the culture of what you're satirizing. We have a European director.
Apologies to all the Tigger Taylor spy fans in Louisiana listening to our show.
Yeah, which is zero, by the way. This is just not understanding the culture. These are Europeans sort of making fun of Louisiana and the gross stereotypes that appear in slasher films, but not really understanding the stereotypes or how to make fun of them. And again, that was my problem up and down with Iron Sky. It's my problem here. We don't need this to be good. We need this to be fun. And I just end up scratching my head every time. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. Was that clever? We know it's not suspenseful. So was it supposed to make us laugh? I think so. I think this is supposed to be funny.
Oh, that's sad.
All right.
At no point did I think I was supposed to laugh.
No, I didn't think so either. In this part, well, okay, I could see maybe how you were supposed to laugh because it kind of felt like it was a parody horror movie. Like, you know, they had the Scary Movie franchise. That's kind of what this felt like. Like, maybe this guy got all of his horror knowledge, Timo got all of his horror knowledge from watching Scary Movie.
Oh, I believe he likes horror movies, but I believe that, again, he's just got a bad sense of humor. His idea of making fun of them or being a part of it is to make awkward references rather than insider knowing references. Like, he's just not, I mean, I'll put a word on it. He's just not that intelligent with his attacks.
Well, the biggest problem I have here is how slow this movie feels. Again, I've pointed out it's an 80-minute movie, but it feels like it is going on forever during these opening scenes. When you see a guy who works at Horror Hound smoking a joint and he's getting attacked and all of this, it's going to be 45 minutes before right. We actually get to the main film. And in that 45 minutes, we're going to see them walking around, as you mentioned, Stuart, with the Juggalos. They're going to try some knife-throwing competition with a guy who looks sus as hell. Throwing ninja stars never comes back in. He talks about this weapon that's handmade like the Creeper. That weapon never comes back into it.
This is what I'm getting at. This town has a vested interest in seeing pregnant women being eaten by the Creeper. And I don't know why that is, and I think this movie needs to explain what this town is going to get out of that deal. Are they trying to make crops grow? What could you possibly benefit by knowing the monster's going to be running around for 23 days eating locals? You have to invent a reason.
Well, we didn't mention this yet, but this is the beginning of a planned Creeper trilogy. And so they're doing setup here. I think this is all setup that will be further explored in the future sequels where we're going to find out more about these cultists and their tie to the Creeper.
Yeah, well, there is opportunity to tell more, but you also have to tease enough to make people curious. And that's where they're failing. I really feel like this town, in fact, it's really kind of, I would say, infuriating. Maybe that's too strong an emotion. It's really disappointing when we see that they're breaking out voodoo dolls and this sort of like generic cult kind of stuff, cowls and stuff like that. It's very uncreative how they're introducing the idea that all the locals want Creeper to get this pregnant girl.
That voodoo doll confused me too, because when they show it, they do a big close-up on it. It's in a yellow ringer shirt. I double-checked because this is what my memory was. Justin Long wears that yellow ringer shirt in the first Jeepers Creepers movie. So what you have is a voodoo doll of a character who should only exist in a movie in this movie. And so why is there a voodoo doll of him? And why aren't his eyes gouged out? It's infuriating that they're trying to make callbacks to things that supposedly don't exist.
And I associate that with this director not having a clear sense of satire and needing it. Needing very desperately to have the audience giggling and enjoying themselves. And we're confused and belaboring a point. It's no surprise when the voodoo woman switches out all the votes. And all of a sudden, Lane, the cynic who doesn't even like horror movies, is the one that wins a ticket into the escape room with the Creeper. But she gets to bring her own camera crew and her boyfriend and all of that. Like, again, if they just want her, why do they give permission for all these other people to muddy the waters?
I think the Creeper needs bodies. He needs body parts. I think they wanted several people to go. I don't know why they wanted that driver Stu to go then. I don't even understand how he fits into any of this. The fact that you have this social media influencer who's also the MC and she has the camera crew and you have them going, I kind of get, because these are outsiders. You pick the outsiders. You should pick the outsiders who don't have people looking for them. If the social media influencer was worth her weight in blonde hair, then she would have people looking for her when she goes missing after this event. It seems like they're just trying to gather up some outsiders to feed the beast here. And again, why somebody who works at the convention and is told to drive them up to this house to be in the escape room then gets locked in with them? It's completely unmotivated.
All right, so here's Creeper's MO. He wakes up, he eats some earthworms, he eats a stereotypical gay guy and a pot smoker, and then he finds his truck and takes out a cell phone tower so that the DJ can't play any more tunes and has to go to vinyl. All right, so there's a whole rave of people to eat, an entire dance floor waiting to be munched on. You could have a creeper that can do the moonwalk and everything once he starts biting these parts. None of that is comedy. Again, if you were making a campy comedy, you go there, you have fun with these concepts, and instead, it's played far too straight that there's a whole dance tent full of people that aren't going to get eaten.
Of course, in every horror movie, you have to have the lame excuse why cell phones don't work. So that way, people can't just call for help. We're locked in this house. That the creeper knows to take out the tower. Okay. The DJ with the vinyl. Well, the creeper's a vinyl collector in this movie. So I think he really wants the DJ to go old school on that one.
Wouldn't it be great if he actually had a copy of Jeepers Creepers, the song, instead of the terrible, lame, we don't have to pay for the rights version that they have here? Jeepers, baby, I'm not paying you the royalties. I mean, it's bad.
Yes, it's called Hungry Eyes, and it has no relation to Eric Carmen, which I thought would actually have been funnier to go with. I stayed for the full end credits in case there was anything after, and they give us a full rendition of this Hungry Eyes song that's...
I thought Hungry Eyes was different. Hungry Eyes was what they played over the credits, and then this was Keep Those Peepers Off of Me.
No, this is the same. Jeepers, baby, you got those hungry, hungry eyes. Jeepers, baby. Keep those peepers off me. It's okay. All one song.
All right, well.
The guy only owns one record and he gets pissed when it breaks.
I mean, isn't it sad that they can't afford a 90-year-old song? Like, that's, like, pathetic. I get that they don't have much money on this production. But the fact that the goddamn movie's called Jeepers Creepers and you can't play Jeepers Creepers, which was his goddamn theme song every time he's coming down the road, it was the thing that was supposed to get our hackles up. It tells you everything about how little this movie has to offer.
In the trailers for this movie, they try to make you think they have it. If you know this new Hungry Eyes song, you hear them in the trailer, you go, Jeepers! And then, like, I don't know where in the song they did it, but they obviously modulated down, you then hear, Creepers! So you need to go, Jeepers! Creepers! To make you think they could even afford a cover of that song that at this point the royalties must be, the copyright has to have expired, right?
No, I mean, it's an Oscar-nominated song, Louis Armstrong. I get that they've kept it in perpetuity. And again, 90 years, 30s. So they got 10 more years before I think it goes into public domain. So you got to pay somebody something. And if you can't, then don't call it Jeepers Creepers. I mean, call it Creeper Reborn. I mean, there's just things you can do to help yourself. But if you name your movie after a song and then can't play the song, you're losing.
I have some questions about the creeper, though, in his every 23 years, because if you follow the timeline of these movies, it doesn't work. We're agreed on that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, this movie already said that everything we know came from movies, and thus we can throw away those rules. So I don't know when, you know, 23 years ago from 1922 was 1999. So, like, that's when the old people were attacked. 1999, and now we have, in 2022, this rave in Louisiana.
Right, so how does the creeper know about cell phone towers to take it out?
There still would have been cell phones, I suppose. Yes. But again, we've had that problem consistently, that this, if it's been truly hibernating and not just down in some man cave, like surfing the web, then it should be very culturally ignorant, and it should be working on instinct and smell. I feel like a lot of that smelling thing has gone away with this new creeper.
It was kind of creepy because of the history of Victor Salva, though.
Well, again, as much as we might resent that a pedophile was profiting, isn't part of what makes it so creepy is the idea that it was a sexual predator monster. Like, that it sniffed out your underpants. Like, that is something to make you feel icky. And now it's not icky. And we do not have the same actor as we have before. We have some 6'2" English drama student who does not have the makeup job that would help him embody this creature.
His teeth on this one really bothered me. They were way too white. It was like he had some pointed veneers going on or something. There were too many teeth in his mouth. It was quite obviously a very different and not as convincing makeup job as the previous three films.
I don't see that he's missing any body parts. I see that he's missing a makeup artist. I feel like he just looks cheap. He looks like a spirit Halloween costume. And again, it really hurts this movie. Now when we finally see him, yeah, we're 45 minutes in and he's at the graveyard here to swoop Blaine away and kill the cameraman. This is why we've been delaying it, because we actually don't have the monster to present. When he shows up, it looks bad.
Very bad. I don't need a lot of great makeup effects from a horror villain, but he also, I don't think, moves very well. He moves like a person. He doesn't move like a creeper. I know you're trying to sever ties with the previous three films and Victor Salva and everybody involved with them, but this creeper, it does feel like a really good costume I'd see at a horror hound and not a monster to be afraid of.
Right. And now he likes pregnant women. Again, that's also a shift away from something that made people uncomfortable. And maybe that's good. We were more homophobic back in 2001. The idea of a monster that went after boys instead of girls got the audience a little bit more on its heels. Here, though, like, he doesn't even want to eat her. He wants to become her baby. Why? You just got reborn. I don't understand why he's obsessed with becoming her fetus.
Maybe this allows him to resurface more than every 23 years. This is maybe how they populate the species.
Right. Or you could have just started by saying that 23 years was made up and you don't even have to go there. But yes, I get the need to drop that time frame because nobody wants a sequel set in, you know, outer space. You know, that's what it would have to be. Or wherever we are in the future, maybe some post-apocalyptic thing. But you want to keep consistency of characters. You want to keep a consistent time frame. But I just don't think that you want to have this Rosemary's Baby Antichrist plot.
I don't understand it is my problem. Is it happenstance that she's pregnant
right
for the creeper? Or is it that she was specifically chosen? I mean, I know she was specifically chosen by the psychic because she was pregnant, but what if there hadn't been a pregnant person at the horror hound? Would they have still gone on with this?
Yeah. Does no horror fan get laid? Is that what they're saying? That nobody is getting any? And so, like, we're so lucky to have anyone that's had sex show up at this thing? I don't get it.
Oh, no. No. Those after parties, they're debaucherous.
That was my impression. I agree. And again, you have a whole town of men and women who want the creeper to be reborn. Why aren't they offering themselves? You know, if you're going to put on the cowl and the, you know, dust the voodoo doll, you should be willing to get knocked up and make a creeper baby.
But does the creeper want to become the baby? Does the creeper want to eat the baby? Does the creeper want its own baby? So it's turning into a baby creeper so that it can be a parent? I mean, there has to be, God help me for getting into this shit, but if you're going to have a life cycle for a monster and you're going to say it hibernates for 23 years and all of this, then we have to get into the birth, death, reproductive cycle. And so is this its way of making new creepers?
Here's what I see. And this is the as best as I can speak to. And it's really bad because it does take it away from an evolutionary idea that this creature can adapt as it eats body parts and it becomes more like a black magic ritual. What I see is that early on, Lane, knowing that she's pregnant, gets touched by the voodoo woman. The voodoo woman puts a spell on her and she starts having visions of this symbol. It's like a circle with a little red dot in it. And it pops up on her pregnancy test, and she has dreams, like waking dreams of the thing. And when Creeper finally snatches her and takes her to his underground lair, he has a ceremonial knife. he stabs her. I think, oh, he's trying to kill her. But he ends up like kind of, I think, carving that into her belly. I think that that symbol is representation of baby inside. And he's doing a black magic thing by doing this thing by putting himself through magical incantation into her body, which is just not what you want the creeper to do.
It's creepy. I mean, if you're going to try to find a new way for a creeper to be creepy that isn't child molestery, then I suppose I'm taking over your baby is a creepy way to go. It was one of the ickiest things in Cronenberg's The Fly, for example.
If you want a pregnant woman, it doesn't seem like it needs to be this hard. It seems like you wouldn't host a horror convention. You would host like a baby shower. I don't know why this would be the method of getting Lane. And I don't know why he wants Lane specifically or if he does. And then what? Like, okay, so then you have babies and like, what does that look like? I feel, all right, we can table some of this curiosity for sequels, but I do think you need to have a stronger sense. When I look at something like Alien, I more or less understood the life cycle in the first movie. And here we're four movies in and I don't get it. They said something early on. They said something really interesting that piqued my interest because I felt like Lane was kind of like a scientist. And she made the comment that maybe it is made in a lab. Maybe this thing is like the love bug that was meant to kill mosquitoes and ended up becoming this useless organism that just pops up every now and then only to die. Like, go that way. Okay, that's a cool plot. Let's have that be revealed in this movie.
Like I said, I feel that there's like 20-ish minutes missing from this film that would explain a lot of these questions we have. The film is short. It's only 80 minutes. And I can't imagine that someone made them cut it down to what it is. And perhaps Timo just didn't have the vision and just saw singly these parts were creepy, but didn't have the vision to link them all together to make a really creepy story. But it kind of feels just incomplete, like he had all these great ideas that could lead to something, but no way to link them together.
Well, none of this would matter if we were having a good time. And where we should be having a good time is once they get into that house. And again, as you've mentioned, Marjorie, only 80 minutes, only 30 minutes of this movie are in the house where you actually get to the plot of the creeper picking off these five people and doing the ritual with that girl and really picking off four people because he takes care of the cameraman before they even get in the house. They're like in some graveyard looking for cell signal and kills him. And so if this part were fun, if we were laughing when the producer steps into a bear trap, if we were scared when the influencer is getting her brain ripped out, because no offense, and let me stereotype here, but the brains are not the part I normally want to consume of a social media influencer.
Right, exactly. Right, and if you did do that and he ate it, you should be funny and have the creeper be more like the influencer. Again, yeah. If you are going madcap and crazy, if you want to be Evil Dead 2 and not Evil Dead, then you need to be able to go where the humor is. And you need to just be outrageous in a Peter Jackson, Sam Raimi kind of way. And Timo, I think, aspires for that, but then doesn't have the daring or the creativity. There are elements here to have fun with, even on this limited budget. And there's a lot we could complain about and have with the technical aspects. But the truth of the matter is, yes, once we're in this house, it's just boring. They just kind of run around from room to room. And eventually, even though there's a gaping hole in the front door, it has been for most of the night, eventually Lane lures the creature outside to the lawn for a trap.
It's the best part of the movie, though.
It is?
There may not be a whole lot to say, but at least things are happening. I'm aware of who the characters are. I'm no longer dumbfounded and super bored. I am less bored during this half hour than I am for the rest of the movie.
No, I think the buildup to suspense, the tease is always more interesting than the reveal when you can't reveal anything good.
That should be the case. The tease should be better, but the tease here sucks. So at least when we get the reveal, we get something rote instead of something bad.
But they don't have a good special effects artist. There's no blood. I don't feel like any of this, these visuals are powerful. Again, you're telling me this house was an escape room? Is it an escape room? Or is it just a house?
It's just a house, which has zero ties to anything in
right.
We've ever seen the creeper before. It's just like some random house in Louisiana in the swamp.
Yeah, they say the Bear Bit house. I'm racking my brain. I go back to look at all the other characters from the three movies. Who was Bear Bit? Nobody.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, it's just a house that is not the house with the pipe that he dumped the bodies down. I don't think, because that house didn't have a giant graveyard in the front yard. But whatever. Again, I'm straining to see how this house is relevant. And then I'm straining to see anything in this house because it's underlit and under art decorated. And there's actually nothing for you. If it is an escape room, you'd want them to be playing with dials and knobs and flipping levers and such to try and get out, because that's the fun of an escape room. There's nothing of that here. Again, there's nothing that happens in the what should be the coolest part of the movie, the meat of the movie.
Right, but the escape room was just a ruse to get Lane to the house. There never really was an escape room, which again leads to the question then, if she hadn't shown up,
right,
would someone else that was pregnant be winning this contest? I don't think it was ever meant to be an escape room, and like it's not like the set dresser just didn't do it. I think it was just the part of the story was it was a ruse, they were tricked, they're all going to die in non-spectacular, boring deaths for a horror movie.
Right.
The fact that he stopped to put a record on for one of them, and it wasn't even the Jeepers Creepers song. Again, we already talked about that, but come on. And I think the only part that could have been gory that was unexpected, I thought, was when the producer steps on the bear trap.
Yeah.
That was the only part that, and it was kind of like Saw-ish at that point, I thought.
Who put the bear trap in the house? Are you trying to trap the creeper? Are you trying to hurt humans?
I think that they put it there so the creeper can eat them. So whomever they were getting to the house, it's a trap for them so he could eat them while he is listening to his old-timey records.
I don't think that he's had any problem eating people. He's been eating people that have pulled off to the side of the road. So all of this, I have to look at it as this town has a need for the creeper. And what that might be is not articulated here at all. And in fact, those people, it's the voodoo lady. There's also some former Miss America who was the one that actually pulled the name out of a glass pumpkin.
Miss Universe.
Yeah. And then there was... this was kind of funny. There was like a priest protesting the horror con at the beginning. Like he was holding up a sign with a no devil horns hand signal and like having religious problems with the fact that there are horror lovers here on his lawn. He's one of the people that has made sure that they can't get out of the house as well.
They call it out because he's saying like the beast has risen or something like that. And Chase says, isn't he supposed to say he has risen? You know, like he's perverting the biblical lines to meet the creeper.
Right. So he's not protesting Satan. He's conjuring a creature. But why? Why are these people are in collaboration? You do owe an explanation of that. Those characters just, they walk away. They don't get killed. There's nothing to explain their motives. They're gone by the end of this movie. That is a fail. That is a storytelling fail.
Yeah, I really thought that the preacher was going to come back in some way or form towards the end of the movie, but none of these people ever paid off.
Quick question. Did we see the creeper having any new things? I feel like each movie he would have something new that would stand out. And the only thing I could tell from this one, he's got the crows have always been following him around, but he's got a white crow this time and he has a whistle. So this feels really stupid, but at a certain point, he can just kind of whistle and everyone grabs their ears and falls to their knees.
Yeah, I don't understand that need for the whistle. And the white crow did confuse me. It's a creepy looking thing. It made me wonder, are there really white crows? But he didn't have any new gadgets. In fact, he had far less. I also went back and rewatched Jeepers Creepers 3, and that truck was so filled with gadgets and cow catchers and everything else. Here, it seemed like it was almost a return to basics.
Yeah, well, basically because they had nothing to present. And again, creatively, financially, you can feel the emptiness in this housing. That's why I would call it the worst part. You're right, Arnie. This should be the good stuff because it's where you start ticking off and killing the influencer, the producer, the rube, all of the cameraman. Like, this should be the stuff that we came to see in a slasher movie, but it's, to me, the most uninvolving stuff in the movie. It tells us there's nothing to give.
Yeah, I remember the great thing about that first film was you kept being shocked. Like, you thought it was a guy in a truck, and then you thought it was some kind of monster. Then the monster sprouted wings. Every time you thought you had a grip on this creeper, something new happened. And here, I think everything you need to know you get basically while he's eating grubs and robbing scarecrows.
Yeah, it's coasting on the old movie and not remaking, rebooting If that's what this director was trying for, then the onus is on you to make something new. And I see them lazily rehashing the past and then whistling. So Lane gets the bright idea that, you know, again, they could have run out of the house at any moment. The escape room has a gaping hole because the creature burst through it. But they spent hours running up and down stairs. And now she's going to lure him out, stick him with a knife, pull out his eyes, and say, "How do you like them peepers, bitch?"
Oh, boy, that line hurt me a lot.
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, it's soul crushing.
It doesn't fit this movie.
No, we don't like her for being strong and fighting back. Like, if that was the thought that, like, yay, she's a last girl and we're going to love Lane. No.
It's bad when Busta Rhymes did it better with Trick or Treat, Bitch.
Right, right. Don't evoke that. Don't go there. This was a scientist. This was a character that didn't like horror movies. Don't turn her into the last girl of a really terrible eighth installment. That's no, don't do it.
But I think that's just the trope.
And her boyfriend and some other dude are on the roof throwing down a weather vane. Like, just...
That's Stu, right? Up there on the weather vane?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was the worst effect of this entire movie. Mm. And this movie does not look great.
Yeah, tough call on that.
But this effect of them with this weather vane that obviously they're holding, I would think, a giant green foam something that they're going to turn digitally into this weather vane spire. And it just kind of disappears when they throw it off the roof. It was just so bad. So bad.
Right. Stu falling off. Again, this is where I say the leaning is towards comedy. It's slapstick that he would survive that and then just slip and fall.
Well, all those birds.
Sure. The thing I was wondering at this point is, are they going to follow that cliche? Will the black guy die before the end of the credits? Like, that was the only curiosity I had, was could they survive that trope?
I really thought they might go Night of the Living Dead, because the police show up, you see this badly battered white woman being carried by this black man.
In Louisiana.
Yeah. I'm like, are they just going to shoot him? Are we going for the nihilistic ending where they're going to shoot the black man? But no, they allow them to walk past. But it may just be I watch the news too much, but I really thought all these white cops were going to shoot the black guy.
I think we're invited to think about that because of Night of the Living Dead. That's not a new idea. I mean, that movie is 60 years old. I do think that we are to be cognizant of that at the end here. And maybe it's a fake out that the truth is, help me out with this, because this got the biggest audible reaction from the audience. People screamed, "What the fuck?" when Lane gets in the police cruiser and her eyes turn black.
Yeah, I don't think we had any reaction from the crowd we were in. And I think I was kind of left with a WTF with, okay, does that mean she's the creeper?
Right.
Is the baby the creeper?
I thought he wanted her baby. Now he's in her?
Yeah, so it doesn't make any sense.
Our audience had so little reaction that I asked Marjorie, I'm like, did you catch that or was it too subtle? Because nobody reacted at all.
And the scene was also really underlit. That was part of the problem. I mean, the whole movie was, but I had to think about it for a second. Yeah, I guess her eyes did kind of turn black. But what is that? What are we supposed to think?
Again, I've never been sure that he wanted to eat the baby. I think he wanted to convert the baby, and maybe that's a sign he did.
Yeah, no, I definitely think if you're going to spend all this time on a baby and it's called Jeepers Creepers Reborn, we're seeing that, yes, he can now be in a body that will support him for longer than 23 days. But again, why go into the mother then? This woman is pregnant. Like, wait the 8 months and then you're free, right? Why experience the postpartum depression and eating the pickles? I just don't get it.
The lore on this is all messed up and it doesn't tie into a nice cohesive package where we're going to be like, oh, okay, that's what all that meant. It was just completely missing.
Well, are we excited to see if it is ever explained? Marjorie Stewart, do you recommend Jeepers Creepers Reborn? Marjorie.
Well, I'm going to do something weird here, and I can only recommend like the first 10 minutes of this movie, which is the scene with Dee Wallace and Gary Graham. Those two are really great together. They have chemistry. They're kind of cute. I like Dee Wallace anyway. Who doesn't like her? And it's the creeper that we know. And I'm not saying the creeper we don't know is bad, but I'm saying it kind of follows with what we know. But then once that scene's over and we see that they're watching something on YouTube, it all goes to hell and it's nonsensical. It's not fun, which I think is one of the big draws of a horror movie. It's either gonna be scary or fun or both, and this has neither of it. It's also really underlit for the entire movie, so you're gonna be squinting a lot. I didn't enjoy that. The end is very unsatisfying and it's gonna kind of leave you questioning your existence as far as watching this movie. So I'm gonna give a 10-minute recommend, and everything after that, the 70 minutes, I'm gonna say is a not recommend.
Stuart.
Yeah, I think that we have now entered the realm of fan film. Like, this doesn't feel like a reboot or a sequel. It feels like some people in Louisiana love that first movie, and for the price of beer and cigarettes said, we can do our version on YouTube. And for a while, just based on that as the criteria, I would say they do a fairly competent job of, like, reliving the beats. I do agree with Marjorie that opening with Dee Wallace is the best stuff, largely because it's just redoing the best stuff of that first movie. But by the time they get to the escape room, that's when audiences should definitely escape. It doesn't understand horror conventions, escape rooms, horror movie tropes. It doesn't understand special effects. I mean, again, we want to see gore. We want to see splatter. We want to see this creature eat and then adapt and grow a new limb. And we definitely want to hear the goddamn song if you're calling it Jeepers Creepers. In so many ways, they should have just given up and gone and bought the beer and cigarettes, because you can only do so much with the budget they've been given, and the lack of creativity, the lack of desire, really, to rebirth and recreate what never really worked as a story, was always just a series of shocks. This was an opportunity truly missed. You could have retroactively fixed what was always broken about this series, and instead, you made a worthless fan film that nobody is going to want to stick around for more sequels.
I'm going to say something really controversial here, but if you want to make another Jeepers Creepers film, I think you need to bring Victor Salva back.
No, I agree.
I understand that he did immensely horrible things and went to jail for them, and we discussed in the very first episode of the Jeepers Creepers retrospective series various ways you can look at that, and is he rightfully canceled forever? But at least he had in mind what the creeper should be, and he had a connection with the villain in that I believe the villain was a personification of his own sins.
And he had talent. He just knew how to make a suspenseful moment.
Yeah. Say what you will about the man, but separating the man from the art in that first movie was pretty good, and the second movie wasn't as bad. So, seeing what happens when it just falls into this, we're in Children of the Corn 8 territory with this film here. It really feels like this is some direct-to-video cash grab that nobody put any thought into. The fact that the director has worked before surprised me when you were bringing that up, Stuart, and that you couldn't finish his film, though, is very telling as well. I don't want to put my peepers on any more Jeepers Creepers that aren't really auteur-driven, dare I say?
Yeah.
If not Salva, I want somebody with a passion for the creeper to take this over and not be a studio-driven project, because this is a really, really strong not recommend. There's nothing playing in that theater that night, including Clerks 3, that I wouldn't have rather seen than this movie.
Yeah, it's so uninspired. It can't even get direct to streaming. I mean, that's the funny thing, is it's still waiting, begging someone to put it out on the internet. Like, this is how desperate they are. They know they don't have anything good here. They know it. If it were in these days, some platform would have snapped it up and be running it for Halloween. But they're not, because this is garbage.
It could be that they lied. They had said, oh, the only way is this Fathom event. Maybe they want to give you the FOMO so you go for those 3 days.
Yeah, but based on the few people in our screening, Arnie, and the one that we actually had to cancel, I don't think anybody's going to get FOMO over this movie. Not enough people are talking about it. In fact, no one's talking about it.
The third one made over $1 million with one night, and this one hasn't cleared $1 million on 3 nights. It's shrinking. It's melting. This thing is not being reborn. It is getting older, longer in the tooth, losing its teeth, and just not working anymore.
Well, Stuart, then this must just completely put you in the right mood for next week's Patreon exclusive show that we're going to be doing. This one is for our donors who did for the Jeepers Creepers level now or back in 2017, but next week we have a patron-exclusive review of Rob Zombie's direct-to-streaming The Munsters.
Yeah, you asked if this was as good as Lord of Salem. that may not be Rob Zombie's bottom. I can honestly, I'll say this much. If I were going to bring The Munsters back, I could think of a million different ways to do it, and it would never occur to me that the guy that had House of a Thousand Corpses and 31 and Astro Creep, what, 25 years ago, would be the guy to make a family-friendly Munsters. He's not, as far as I can tell, Rob Zombieing it up. This won't be a sleazy, trashy, you know, grindhouse Munsters. This is him trying to make a cute sitcom. I'm curious how he thinks he can do that.
It still stars Sherry Moon, though, so he's not gotten that far away from his zombieisms.
Yeah, right. Who else will work with him?
Well, we will find that out next Friday for our patrons of $10 or more. And last week for patrons, if you aren't a patron, we also reviewed the film The Ninth Gate, the Johnny Depp, Roman Polanski horror film. So there's over 70 bonus movie reviews if you become a patron of $10 or more on our Patreon or our Podbean at nowplayingpatron.com. So thank you for listening. Thank you for your donation for Jeepers Creepers, either now or back in the day. Marjorie Stewart, thank you for keeping your peepers open during this movie with me. And until next time, keep on creeping on.
Where'd you get those creepers? Jeepers Creepers. Where'd you get those eyes?
We threw everything we had at it, Danny. All the fire and manpower this building had to offer.
And it just made a whole lot of noise and flew off with exactly what it wanted.
Thank you again for your support of Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
You actually did something decent for me. That's a part of history you can't change.
Support from listeners like you is what keeps Now Playing able to podcast week after week.
I'm thinking past the point of my own selfish little existence now.
The film discussed in this podcast and all audio clips and music used are the property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. This podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created or produced the film analyzed herein. Now Playing Podcast is an independent movie review podcast with no affiliation with any company involved in the publishing, creating, or distribution of that film series.
Is something real? I heard it was a bunch of bullshit.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Truth be, I'd be lying if I said I knew that telling you this would do any good.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, all rights reserved. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Directed by...
I was going to enjoy this.
Horror Film Chase is excited to be going to the Horror Hound Convention in Louisiana. His pragmatic girlfriend...
I'm going to stop you. Did you say Horror Film Chase?
Horror Film Fan Chase.
Oh, I don't think you said the word fan.
Okay.
It was very confusing. Horror Film Chase. That's all I heard anyway. You might have cut out.
Did this have a Rob Zombie... Oh, god damn it, I just blanked on that movie. The one... I was about to say the one that stars Sherry Moon. The one where she's a DJ.
Lord of Salem.
Which is the scene with Dee Wallace and... What's his name?
Gary Graham.
Yeah, okay. The other dude.
Gary Graham. I keep on to call him Graham Green, but he's not Graham Green. He's Gary Graham.
That'd be something.
Graham Green's completely different actor.